This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 7th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 137. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. Checking in at the Greater Vancouver Zoo, which reopened on June 1st with big plans for the future. The Big Deal feature. A tribute to the late, great Dermot Travis, the executive director of Integrity BC. Hear clips of Dermot's appearances on the Breaker.News podcast and hear what he meant to Integrity BC founder Wayne Crooks and journalism professor Sean Holman. Plus, I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is it about time for lawmakers from democratic countries to hold China accountable? The Interparliamentary Alliance on China formed last week. 22 lawmakers from across the political spectrum are co-chairs of IPAC from Australia, Canada, the European Union, Germany, Japan, Lithuania, Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, the UK, and the US. Representing Canada are former Liberal Cabinet Minister Erwin Kotler and Conservative Member of Parliament Garnet Jenness. IPAC's goals are to safeguard international rules-based order, to uphold human rights, to promote trade fairness, to strengthen security, and to protect national integrity. IPAC formed just in time for the 31st anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, for Beijing's imposition of a national security law on Hong Kong, and for the ongoing global impacts of the coronavirus pandemic that came from Wuhan. China is a country where journalists, lawyers, and whistleblowers are routinely jailed and the internet is censored. So, we wish the Interparliamentary Alliance on China well, and we'll keep an eye on its progress. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
You gotta do what?
What?
Dr. Henry said, we're gonna have to wait to vaccinate. So just stay strong and sing this song. You gotta wash your hands, don't touch your face.
John Mitchell and his Vancouver independent single, Do What?
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the South China Morning Post, Tiananmen vigil in Hong Kong draws thousands despite coronavirus-related ban. Police stand back as crowds pour into Victoria Park and Causeway Bay and take up a couple of soccer pitches. Show of defiance comes on a politically charged day as legislature passes a law criminalizing disrespect for national anthem. End of one-party rule and rectify the verdict on 1989 movement, they chanted, drowning out police warnings that they were taking part in an unauthorized assembly as they poured into the park. They also ignored messages broadcast over loudspeakers that they could be spreading COVID-19. Titled Candlelight in Every Corner of Hong Kong by the organizers, this year's commemoration was also driven by concerns about the city's autonomy with the impending new law that would ban acts and activities deemed as endangering national security. It was also the first time in 30 years that the Alliance in Support of Democratic Patriotic Movements of China had been barred by the authorities from holding the annual event in Victoria Park. Kyoto in the Japan Times. Japan considers slimmed down Tokyo Olympics to curb virus spread. Changes could include a reduction in the number of spectators and a scaling back of the opening and closing ceremonies of both the Olympics and Paralympics. The organizing committee and the IOC are already in discussions about revisions to their operational plans to reduce costs and adopt measures against the virus. Keone Everington in the Taiwan News, Russian coronavirus website lists country of Taiwan. On Coronavirus Control, a Russian website that provides real-time updates on Wuhan coronavirus cases around the world, the entry for Taiwan includes its national banner and the description coronavirus in the country of Taiwan today. As for Hong Kong and Macau, it also lists them separately from China with the headings coronavirus in Hong Kong today and coronavirus in Macau today. Strangely, the flags of certain countries that are adversaries of Russia, such as the US and UK, are missing. It is not clear if this is a political statement or a glitch with the website. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
You gotta help your neighbors all across this land. And the frontline workers.
keep us safe. They are brave souls. By their courage, I'm amazed.
Burnaby City Councilor Joe Keithley of DOA and Mayor Mike Hurley with We're All In This Together.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
David Gutman in the Seattle Times. After months of pleading for social distancing, health officials support Seattle protests. Black Lives Matter calls them too dangerous. Infectious disease experts at the University of Washington wrote a letter that ultimately circulated nationally and drew more than 1,200 signatures saying that protests against systemic racism must be supported. Black Lives Matter Seattle King County, which said it has not been involved in planning the protests, published a protest safety guide for those that do participate. Quote, "Do not underestimate how dangerous the virus is. At the time of this writing, it has killed more than 100,000 people in the United States," the guide says. Situations where people are shouting or singing can spread more of the virus into the air. Stacey Glenn in the Olympian, can't breathe. Tacoma police restraint of Manuel Ellis caused his death, medical examiner reports. At the time of his March 3rd death, officials said the 33-year-old appeared to be suffering from excited delirium, which often includes attempts at violence, unexpected strength, and very high body temperature. They said that might have explained why Ellis allegedly banged on a patrol car and attacked two officers trying to calm him down. Although Ellis, an openly struggling addict, had drugs in his system when he died, the Pierce County Medical Examiner's Office has determined Ellis died of respiratory arrest due to hypoxia, due to physical restraint. His death was ruled a homicide and remains under investigation. Czech news. Vancouver Island woman shot and killed by police in New Brunswick. A 26-year-old woman from Vancouver Island was fatally shot by a police officer she allegedly threatened early Thursday morning in northern New Brunswick. Family has identified the woman as Chantel Moore and says the Indigenous woman had recently moved to the province from Tofino to live with her mother and daughter. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. Province's immigration program at risk of fraud and corruption, Auditor General's report. As BC government ponders back-to-office plans, Dr. Henry cautions about testing. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. A friend of the Breaker.News podcast, more importantly, an advocate for British Columbians and for democracy, Dermod Travis, passed away June 1st. Dermod was BC's most vital voice of the post-Olympic era. When the IOC took its circus back to Switzerland after Vancouver 2010, it became a province where the government put casino construction ahead of hospital construction. Politicians were for sale. Money laundering ran rampant. Homelessness increased. Transparency and accountability came under attack. In 2011, Dermod became the voice and the face of Integrity BC, determined to battle corruption and to take back BC. As Tom Hawthorne wrote in the Taii, Travis was BC's brilliant political watchdog. A United Church minister's son, Travis had a varied and sometimes checkered career before returning to BC earlier this century. Some of his ventures flopped. He was once briefly a boxing promoter. More successfully, he played host to the Dalai Lama on a visit to Vancouver. Over the years, he had associations with more than a half dozen political parties across the spectrum, including 2 years as national spokesperson for the Federal Green Party under leader Jim Harris. Travis suffered a double whammy of health problems with liver and heart ailments this spring, but he died in hospital 2 days shy of his 60th birthday. We will remember him the best we can, in his own words, with highlights of his 4 appearances on the Breaker.News podcast. British Columbia was the Wild West of political campaign financing before the 2017 election. There were no limits to the dollar amounts and no limits to the sources of funds. But Dermod Travis helped make it the dominant issue of the 2017 election campaign. When the BC NDP and Green Alliance defeated the BC Liberals in a post-election confidence vote, one of their first orders of business in the fall session of the legislature was to ban corporate and union donations and to cap individual donations at $1,200 a year. They also brought in a direct taxpayer subsidy. But, as with any legislation, it is far from perfect. On the third edition of the Breaker.News podcast in November 19th, 2017, Dermot pointed to some of those gaps and loopholes.
In terms of the omission side, not only do you have the issue of how parties spend their money as being one of the omissions, I think that they missed one, a golden opportunity to reduce the disclosure requirements in the legislation. Currently, only donors over $250 are disclosed. That has not been changed in the new legislation. Even the Liberal Party proposed lowering it to $100. I think they've made a mistake in that, and I think they've made a mistake in not adding on what information should now be collected about contributors. And the most important piece of information that needs to be collected about contributors is who is your employer. Because one lesson from other jurisdictions that have banned corporate and union donations is some companies in particular that have tried to use their employees, our list of what are called in Quebec straw men, to make political donations on their behalf, and that they are then reimbursed. But it is very much corporate money. SNC-Lavalin recently accepted the ruling of Elections Canada in this regard, that they in fact had done that practice for a number of years at the federal level after corporate donations had been banned in the federal arena.
In November of 2018, the bombshell suspension of Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz. Speaker Daryl Plekis called the RCMP in to investigate. Two special prosecutors were appointed. In January 2019, Plekis released a damning report about corruption in the legislature, how the BC Liberal-appointed James and ex-RCMP officer Lenz had bilked taxpayers. Plekis called for a forensic audit, and the all-party Legislative Assembly Management Committee was going to engage an Auditor General from outside BC.
In the meantime, BC's Auditor General, Carol Bellringer, has kicked up a bit of a storm about being excluded from this process and announced her own audit into the Legislative Assembly. I think one of the things that Lambertsey will have to do is straighten that out so it is very clear to the public. I also think it is a mistake for Carol Bellringer to be involved in this particular process and audit. Not for anything that she has done in the past that would suggest some type of partisanship or some type of potential possibility of trying to sweep something under the carpet. Rather, this is going to be a report at the end of the day that the public must feel that all of the issues at the Legislative Assembly have been reviewed, investigated, and dealt with properly. If the person conducting that process comes from out of province and has no vested interest, as far as the public can see, in the outcome, we're going to have a better product at the end of the day. And I think it's why Ms. Bellringer, who has a number of activities and a number of projects underway already, should gracefully step aside and allow Lambertsey to decide what is best, and as far as I'm concerned, what is best would be an outside Auditor General coming in.
The Legislative Assembly Management Committee should have listened to Dermot. In early fall 2019, Bellringer submitted a lackluster report on the legislature. She failed to do a forensic audit. Within a few days, she announced her resignation. February 2019 was also the early days of the SNC-Lavalin scandal in Ottawa. Jody Wilson-Raybould quit cabinet after the Globe and Mail reported on political interference by the Prime Minister's office. Justin Trudeau wanted to protect the Montreal engineering giant from criminal prosecution. Dermot was a keen analyst of infrastructure procurement in BC.
The problem is easily illustrated when you see the same companies coming up time and time again in the bidding stage and in the preferred proponent stage. And that smacks, quite frankly, of almost territorial interest that this province is sort of seen potentially by competitors in the construction industry as being someone else's turf. There's no point in bidding. Why do we even want to go there? So let's go bid somewhere else. That's not the image BC wants. It's not the process that we should have in place that would allow someone to believe that. Now, we ran into the same problem with Site C and PetroWest. We're now about to do this potentially again. There is no guarantee today that the SNC-Lavalin that the BC government negotiated with will still exist in 6 months' time. And that should be the first concern of whether or not SNC should have been allowed to get this far in the process. The second concern is when you see Kiewit showing up again. Kiewit shows up too many times on public infrastructure projects. They continuously overshoot their budgets. And in some cases, Sea to Sky Highway being one, there have been some structural issues with that project that Kiewit undertook.
Dermot was right again. By July 2019, SNC-Lavalin pulled out of bidding for major infrastructure projects, such as the Patella Bridge and Broadway Subway. By year-end, the company pleaded guilty to a fraud charge in Montreal. On July 14th, 2019, edition 90 of the Breaker.News podcast, I asked Dermot for his thoughts on the Union of BC Municipalities announcing that it would allow the Chinese government to host a wine and cheese party for local government politicians at its fall convention in Vancouver. Dermot, was it right for the UBCM to sign up China to begin with?
It's never been right for the UBCM to do it, and I think one of the key indicators of that is that there's only one foreign government that is a sponsor, and it's the government of China. And you don't see foreign governments acting in a similar capacity with similar organizations across the country. This is a one-off backroom special deal for the government of China, a country with one of the most deplorable human rights records in the world, being allowed to wine and dine our elected officials across British Columbia. And certainly they spare no expense. It's not just the $6,000 sponsorship that goes into the pockets of the UBCM. You're looking at the cost of the catering that the government's going to put on for that event. And certainly when they were in Victoria at the Union Club, all reports would indicate that that particular reception probably had a fairly hefty price tag for the government.
Port Coquitlam Mayor Brad West led a protest at the convention. Several politicians boycotted the cocktail party. After the convention, the UBCM decided it would no longer allow such a lobbying activity by a foreign government. On January 12, 2020, edition 116, Dermot talked about the fallout of the Police Act investigation of Gary Lenz. Former Speaker Linda Reid did not cooperate with investigator Doug Lepard. Lenz retired in disgrace in fall 2019, but Dermot makes the case for an investigation of Linda Reid, who said in 2019 that she would not run for re-election.
This is what she told Mr. Lepard, and she directed him to her legal counsel. Well, when you go through her expense claims, what you find is on July 21, Linda Reid was at work as an MLA. On July 22nd, she received an email from Doug Lepard. Now, sometime between July 21st and 22nd, she caught a ferry to Victoria, British Columbia. And someone else, on July 22nd, got a Harbor Air flight to Victoria, and that would be Andrew Wilkinson. You go through, page by page, Linda Reid's travel expenses. It is very clear she was not away for a few weeks, and she was very much at work, and was very much at work all the way up until July 29th, when she went to a caucus meeting in Kitimat Terrace, BC. She had the opportunity to meet him. She lied to the public when she claimed that she was out of town, and she lied to Doug Lepard. Now, I think it would be interesting to know if Doug Lepard had first phoned asking for a meeting. Was there any earlier communication between herself and Doug Lepard indicating that he wanted to meet with her? Did Gary Lenz give her a heads up that Doug Lepard was going to be wanting to meet her? Did Andrew Wilkinson, when he was in Victoria, sit down with Linda Reid to discuss the situation? These are all the questions that now jump out of those expense claims that she filed.
Also on edition number 116, I asked Dermot about BC Liberal MLA Ben Stewart of West Kelowna and his hiatus from caucus while Elections BC investigated a campaign finance irregularity. Stewart refused to do an interview, and Elections BC refused to release a copy of the investigation report that it said cleared Stewart of wrongdoing.
If you don't want to answer questions from the public, then don't run for public office. And what we find too often with some of the MLAs in the province, when they find they're knee-high in muck, that they want the public to know as little as possible. And quite frankly, it doesn't work to their advantage. If they were upfront and forward with the public in terms of all of the details to such matters, it would be a one-day, two-day wonder in the media. Doing what they're doing now simply drags it out.
After Speaker Daryl Plekis's shocking report in January 2019, the NDP government said it would finally add the Legislative Assembly to the Freedom of Information Law. But more than a year later, it has still not tabled an amendment. It is business as usual at the seat of government in Victoria, which spends more than $70 million a year and is beyond the reach of the public records law.
I think it's an opportunity, particularly if the Premier decides he wants to go into an early election, to put these two issues to rest quickly by introducing the necessary legislation and by also making certain that it is all-encompassing legislation. It's not how little can we get away with, but rather how much out there can we make certain is available to the public. I'm scared that we're going to hear in the negotiations over extending freedom of information to the legislature, the various caucuses will want to have certain types of documents exempt. Well, we need to have that debate. Let's have that debate. But let's not have it behind closed doors. Let's not have it where the public cannot follow along to see what the debate is. I also think, given the amount of money that each caucus receives, that they should be required to put out annual financial statements, which my understanding is they do prepare for their internal purposes, but that those financial statements should be made public, and that the same types of documents that you might want to access through freedom of information related to any type of financial transaction in any other part of government should apply to the legislature as well.
Sean Holman is professor of journalism at Mount Royal University in Calgary. Sean is a former member of the Legislative Press Gallery in Victoria, where he once published Public Eye Online. I asked Sean what Dermot Travis meant to British Columbia.
Dermot meant accountability for British Columbia. I mean, on a lot of issues, he was the primary person speaking out, especially when it came to issues of democratic accountability and corruption and wrongdoing within the public sector. He was oftentimes the sole person that could be counted on to raise those issues. And he was usually the only person that the media could go to for expert commentary about that. So his loss is amazingly significant.
Well, what did Dermot mean to you?
You know, I've often been someone who has struggled to find their tribe, so to speak. I oftentimes didn't really fit in well with most other members of the media. But Dermot was part of my tribe. I think we both shared the same values, the same commitment to righting wrongs, standing up for Olgai. And that's the reason I'm going to really miss him.
What is Dermot's legacy for British Columbia, the years that he worked with Integrity BC, as you said, standing up for the little guy and trying to right wrongs?
I think it's almost immeasurable. And I say that because so much of the work that Dermot did was behind the scenes, providing research to journalists, providing tips, providing information that otherwise wouldn't make it into the public domain. So, you know, you can talk about his public accomplishments, like, for example, electoral reform, like, for example, the spending scandal at the legislature involving Craig James. But I think his legacy is much broader than that, and it's one that is really difficult to quantify just due to the sheer amount of work that he did outside the public eye.
Vancouver's Wayne Crooks is the founder of Integrity BC. I asked Wayne what Dermid meant to BC.
Dermid is probably the person most responsible for propelling the government to enact finance election reform to the extent that they've enacted it. I think probably we've gone 50% of the way. Certainly that was a major focus of what Dermid was trying to accomplish, and with the support of the media, the electors and the government, we now are in a much better place than we were before.
And what did Dermid mean to you?
Dermid was a dear personal friend. We first met by phone when I made a job offer to him in 2004. I was the national campaign manager for the Green Party of Canada in the 2004 election, and he was our first director of communications and director of media as part of establishing a professional Green Party of Canada.
So what was his legacy?
Dermid focused upon the environment, human rights, integrity in government. His lasting legacy in British Columbia is the electoral finance reform. That was the focus of his work at Integrity BC. He pushed that, and with the help of voters, other activists in Integrity BC, and the provincial government, we now have half of what we need as far as electoral finance reform in British Columbia.
The Greater Vancouver Zoo in Alder Grove reopened June 1st as part of Phase 2 of British Columbia's restart plan. General Manager Serge Lussier and his staff welcomed the public back on the sunny morning to view 140 species on 120 acres near Exit 73 of Highway 1. Originally called the Vancouver Game Farm, the half-century-old Greater Vancouver Zoo has had an up-and-down past. But Lussier is spearheading a five-year, $20 million revamp backed by the owners, the Jin family from China. Lussier calls it the Zoo of the Future. Here is Lussier describing his vision.
I'm the new general manager of the zoo. I came in 9 months ago. And in my mind, and in discussion with the ownership, the plans are to create this beautiful site will become the Zoo of the Future. It has already started. In front of the zoo, you saw that the admissions is under construction right now. It's a totally new business, new building that will have the admissions, new bathrooms, gift shop, offices. First thing, you know, 50 years old is the zoo, so there's some we need to invest in having a fresh and new image. But this is going to go much further. What am I talking about the Zoo of the Future is that we have some ideas. We have a vision of the zoo, and a few, I'll just talk quickly about a few of our projects. I've been in the field for 40 years. I've managed the three safari parks in the country. One which was totally Canadian animals, an institution that dedicates itself to Canadian nature and fauna, and the other two that were more African. So the zoo will become half of a safari park, and this safari park will be a Canadian safari park, more British Columbian. So this will happen over the next year or two. We were slowed down by COVID-19, but we started to build. And this, once this safari park is built, then the zoo will not be a zoo anymore. It will be Vancouver Safari Park and Zoological Garden, enhancing animal lives and showcasing our country and our nature. Another part that I want to do that's important to me, very dear to me, is the African savanna. So I'm going to open up a large area where animals will live together, will cohabitate as they do in the wild. I want to eliminate fences. So I'm going to build a new elevated walkway with a walkway that's going to bring you over there, and you're going to oversee the savanna. Right, and I'm also going to build a beautiful restaurant there with a large deck, so that it will be a piece of Africa in the heart of BC. And the fourth project that I think is very dear to me is the Big Cat Complex. So this is going to be unique in the world. I'm going to enlarge the habitats. I'll have tunnels for the public, glass tunnels to go through the heart of the habitat, and tunnels for the animals that's going to go from one habitat to another. And also going to do this 360 so that the animals will stay 1 week in their habitat, and the week after they'll move to another one, right? So it's going to be enrichment, it's going to be exciting, and drive animal behavior more towards what they would feel in nature, right? So all of this is coming over the next 5 years. Also within that, I want to create an education and conservation center. Manita can talk about our conservation actions that are very dear to me. We're going to keep being a rescue center. We take a lot of pride into being a rescue center. Many of our animals are rescued, like our bears, grizzly bear, a black bear, cougars, lion. We want to keep doing this, saving animal life, enriching their lives, and educating the public. It's our mission, it's our vision, and I feel that over the next few years, what we're going to do in Vancouver will make the Greater Vancouver Zoo become a destination for tourism.
More information about the Greater Vancouver Zoo in Alder Grove, go to gvzoo.com.
Aye. Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
Donald Trump now calling for military action against protesters. We saw protesters tear gas yesterday to make way for a presidential photo op. I'd like to ask you what you think about that. And if you don't want to comment, what message do you think you're sending?
We all watch in horror and consternation what's going on in the United States. It is a time to pull people together, but it is a time to listen. It is a time to learn what injustices continue despite progress over years and decades. But it is a time for us as Canadians to recognize that we too have our challenges.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the folks at Via Sport British Columbia, the amateur sports and recreation nonprofit that published Return to Play guidelines for BC sports organizations. We need sports in our communities, and sports will help lead us out of the pandemic shutdown, carefully and one step at a time. Find the guidelines at viasport.ca. nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar, send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. Those were the voices of Katrina Chen and Bowen Ma, with music by Bob Deeth, covering Avril Lavigne's Keep Holding On. All three are BC NDP MLAs. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 7th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on June 7th in 1863, Mexico City was captured by French soldiers? And June 7th in 1866, 1,800 Fenian raiders were pushed back into the U.S. after looting Saint-Armand and Frelicksburg. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Be like Paul Doroshenko, who is at the $10 a month NewsHound level of support for thebreaker.news. For more information on how you can support The Breaker, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.